continuing on with the science and data of the COVID pandemic in India, we look at a few more interesting and important things. Some data first and then some important and interesting science. So data, now you have about 50 deaths in India that are linked to COVID. Remember, 8 of these deaths, until the patient died, we did not know they had COVID. It's only after their deaths that they were tested and it was discovered that they had COVID. So they were not treated for COVID. So 50 deaths so far. Our reporters Mohana Basu and Angna Chakrabarty have data on 46 of them. Remaining 4 we are getting, but 46 is a sufficiently large number of cases. Now, if we look at these 46 cases, a few things stand out. First of all, what is the average age of these people? So, the average age is 61. Now, that is a little bit misleading. Because average age would have been 66, 7 or maybe even 8. But for two cases, two deaths which have distorted this average. And these deaths are of a 25-year-old in UP and a 38-year-old in Bihar. And I will tell you about them. Now, how is it that these deaths are divided on the basis of age? So, over above 70, 10 of the 46 cases are above 70 years of age. In fact, the oldest is 85, although we also have to note that in Kerala, a couple 93 and 88 years old have fully recovered, declared non-infectious and they've gone home. So, it doesn't mean that if you are old, it's just that your odds become a little bit poorer. Over 80, globally now the average is about 15% if you get hit by COVID. So a majority would still be all right, they'll still survive. So 10 are above 70, 18 are between 60 and 70. That makes it 28 out of 46. That is much more than half, almost 65%. Then 16 are between 40 and 60. And only 2 are below 40. That is the person in Uttar Pradesh, 25, and the person in Bihar, 38. Now, these two cases, they are the two youngest to die. The 25-year-old in Uttar Pradesh had a liver failure, so a very strong comorbidity. COVID obviously came and the body could not take that additional shock. And the 38-year-old who died in Bihar was a case of renal failure. So, renal failure or kidney failure is now emerging as a major comorbidity or an existing sickness that becomes a compounding element in a COVID infection. So, in fact, if you look at the rest, out of the 46, 34 had serious comorbidities. So, if you match the data and say 34 out of 46 have comorbidities, average age is 61. If you take out these two fellows, 25 and 38, average age 67, 68, it gives you an idea of who this disease threatens most of all. Even in a country like ours, which with not such developed health system, remember, India spends very little per capita on health. America spends more than any country in the world, and yet America is short of healthcare or critical care facilities right now. The other important thing here is if you look at gender mix, 36 of the 46 are male, 10 are female. Now, if you look at Italy, Spain, you will find almost the same kind of demographic there also. So, this could be something to do with gender. This could be something to do with smoking habit. This could be something to do with alcohol. We don't know. But almost in every case, you will find either a serious sickness, pre-existing sickness, or what doctors call comorbidity, or you will find smoking or one of these complicating a condition, smoking or alcoholism, which also leads to liver damage. So these are important things to look at. In fact, from what data we have, of the 46 patients about whom we know, only 6 were put on ventilators. So maybe many of those died from causes other than not being able to breathe, as is the case mostly in the Western countries that we find. So this also is an important statistics. Although I did land up at the Government of India daily briefing today, and I did ask a question about how many people are on the ventilator, but I got a very roundabout answer, and that answer was something like, globally so many are. So this is the old Bharat Sarkar bureaucratic answer. A friend of mine, Ashok Saikia, unfortunately he is no more. He used to work in the Prime Minister's office. He was an IAS officer, very bright IAS officer from Assam cadre, and he spent some time working with Dr. Raja Ramana when he was chairman of Atomic Energy Commission. So he was the IAS officer in Dr. Raja Ramana's office, and as he told me then, and this is something that I wrote about a long time back, that Dr. Raja Ramana said that one of your main functions is to answer Parliament questions. But remember, never lie to Parliament, except that when Parliament asks you your name, tell them your date of birth. So that is the kind of answer I got also. I asked somebody for his name, I got his date of birth, which is a typical bureaucratic answer. But it's not impossible to get this data from the states, because this is not a national state secret. So we can tell you that of the 46 who have died, about 6, from what we know, were put on ventilator. We might be wrong by 1 or 2, but I don't think so. Our reporters are very good. So these are the important things to look at. Once again, if you are beyond 60 years of age, be very careful. In fact, 55 years, be very careful at all ages, but 55 plus, be very careful. Even the person at Dharavi who died, 54-year-old, had renal failure. So these are important issues, and kidney disease has now become a very significant risk factor in India. In fact, government has now issued or is in the process of issuing instructions for kidney patients, for dialysis, etc. That is something that the Supreme Court had also said, because India is the kidney disease capital of the world, unfortunately, because of our high incidence of metabolic disorders. So that is one. Now, second thing is, it is quite likely, in fact, the scientist at this briefing today, Professor R.R. Gangakhedkar, he said in answer to a question by a journalist that ICMR was discussing the possibility now of allowing antibody tests. Now, what are antibody tests and how are these different from tests that we are currently conducting? Now, antibody tests are to be conducted only in selected areas which become hotspots, or around which you might think that there could be a lot of people, because antibody tests are faster, quicker, etc., etc. South Koreans have done that. Now, what is the essential difference? Let me try and explain the science to you. And once again, I'll try to make it as simple as possible without making it juvenile. So, the test that we now conduct is called an RT-PCR test. What does it stand for? RT stands for reverse transcriptase. It's an enzyme. Anything that ends "ase" is an enzyme. So reverse transcriptase, polymerase chain reaction, that is PCR. Reverse transcriptase hyphen polymerase chain reaction. So that is RT-PCR. Now, transcriptase is an enzyme and polymerase is an enzyme. So what happens? How does it work? Let me try and explain it. I hope I succeed in simplifying it without confusing you further. Now, polymerase is an enzyme that targets a particular section or point of DNA. What it does is, when it targets it in one cycle, or you can say one strike, it doubles the amount of that element in that DNA. Think of it like the human body. Something comes and strikes it. So you get a little swelling, strikes it again, you get twice as much swelling, crude example, but maybe it simplifies it. So what happens is, suppose it does it 20 times, then that number goes up to 2 raised to the power 20. So what might have been a little bit of DNA becomes a lot of DNA, enough for the test to detect it. So then you can say this person is infected with coronavirus. That's how the test works. But coronavirus, as we've been telling you all this while, is not a DNA virus, it's an RNA virus. So how does a DNA test detect an RNA virus? So once again, the way to do it is to use science to convert this RNA into DNA. How is that done? For that, you need another enzyme. So just as polymerase goes and increases this element in the DNA so that you are able to count it, reverse transcriptase is used to turn RNA into DNA. So that's why the test is RT-PCR. Reverse transcriptase, RT converts RNA into DNA, and then polymerase causes a chain reaction to make that number rise so that the test can detect it. An antibody test, on the other hand, is a very different kind of test. What happens with an antibody test? When your body is attacked by any outside invader, virus, bacteria, allergy, anything your body doesn't like or is not familiar with. It happens also when you get an organ transplant. Your body doesn't like it. Something's come from outside. So your body's immune system reacts. It releases antibodies to fight this fellow. Kaun aa gaya andar? Bahar nikalo. That's why people who have organ transplants have to be given very heavy doses of steroids for a long time to suppress their immunity, to suppress the immune reaction. Now, when your body releases antibodies, those can be detected. That is a different kind of test. That is a test that many countries used, South Korea also used, when infection in their societies became very widespread, when it became a community infection. Now, the one twist with an antibody test is that when your body gets infected, it does not necessarily have antibodies. In fact, for several days, it does not have antibodies because a new element has come in. Your body then takes time building or producing antibodies specific to this invader. So this test will show up results maybe 5, 7, 10 days after you initially got infected. So this is not that accurate. It's quite possible that you may have an antibody test and may still be infectious. At the same time, it's quite possible that you may have a RT-PCR positive test but an antibody negative test. So these are things that doctors, scientists, epidemiologists use in combination. The two tests have a different purpose. Now, we are talking about antigens and antibodies. Antigens are invaders, ghuspatias. Antibodies are your army at the line of control. Your body's immunity has a line of is your line of control. Now, is there something in India that gives us Indians special protection? And if there is such a thing, okay, we have a lot of gods and goddesses, but importantly, the only thing that works in the end is your immune system. And where does the immune system come from? It comes from your genes. So there is a wonderful article, very interesting article in the Hindustan Times by Dr. Narinder Kumar Mehra. Now, Dr. Narinder Kumar Mehra is a very well acknowledged scholar, researcher, teacher on immunology. He was a professor of immunology in All India Institute of Medical Sciences. He now has a chair at ICMR, Indian Council of Medical Research. He was Dean of Research at AIIMS. He now has the ICMR National Chair on Research. Now, he says in that article that, look, if you look at how COVID is spreading all over the world, there's a wide variation, even in mortality, from 0.2% for younger patients to 15% for people above 80. 15% for people above 80. At the same time, different countries also have different patterns, particularly different pattern of spread. And he says many things determine whether you will get the infection or not, you will die or not. And he says age is an element, smoking is an element, comorbidities are an element. But there has to be a reason why in India so far, it's a very important thing that he says, and he's not a quack, right? He is a very serious researcher and somebody who's been around a long time, is 70 years old. He's done this all his life. He says, how come in India we haven't really seen a case of severe COVID yet? Because the deaths that we have seen so far, we told you of these, only 6 went on the ventilator. Others have died for other causes because their body got so weakened by COVID. So he said, how come we haven't seen such cases of severe COVID in India? And then he holds forth on that based on science. He said, why is there almost zero occurrence of severe COVID? So he said, all right, there is a question of how much viral load you have. That's a point we had discussed yesterday, how much virus you've got in your body. But that's also a function of how much virus your body has been able to fight back or defeat. So he says, is there something in the Indian gene that gives it, that gives us better protection? So he says, in the gene, what is it that fights an invader? This is called, it's a gene called HLA, human leukocyte antigen. It's called human leukocyte antigen system. What this does is, it's a kind of marker. When the bad guy comes from outside, it goes and lights it up. If you read about military matters, it's a bit like if you want to hit a target, then maybe one plane will go and throw laser at it. It's called lighting the target. Then other plane can drop a bomb that goes riding that laser wave or whatever wave you use to strike that target. So this HLA identifies or lights up the target and directs the body's antibodies to it. So he says antibodies can't generally go and fight somebody. Antibodies have to be told, this is the one that you have to fight. So antibodies need the antigen or the enemy to be presented to them almost in a formal manner. Ye aapke samne pesh hai, aap isse mukabla kijiye. Formal manner is his words, not my words. So when that happens, then your body is able to fight back. Now, he says in India, we've been exposed to a lot more bacteria, parasites, viruses, given our tropical climate, poverty, hygiene conditions. So maybe our bodies have a lot more of memory T cells. T cells are the ones that the body uses to fight these invaders, and they then retain a memory. So they remain active. So he says, maybe our bodies have more memory T cells, but this needs more research. He says, don't jump to conclusion. Second, he says, India has very high genetic diversity in its HLA. HLA, we just now told you, is human leukocyte antigen. So more diversity it has, the more kinds of bad guys it might be able to identify or light up for your antibodies to go and fight. He has done research in the past, and he says that in his research he's found many large amounts of novel or new Indian HLA genes and alleles. What are alleles? Once again, I'll try and explain to you. Alleles are, again, a term from immunology, where each of 2 or more of alternative forms of a gene that arise by mutation. So you have a mutation, but more forms of the same gene arise by mutation. They are called alleles. They sit on the same chromosome as the gene. So the more you have, the more diversity you have. So he says his research has shown in the past that Indians have a lot more of this. And then he goes on to say, because we've had so many of these diseases, there's been widespread use of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine on the Indian population. What he doesn't mention, which some other people are saying, that Indians also have the BCG protection if it works. But again, he qualifies by saying that all this is right now thinking aloud. All this needs greater research. What you need right now is total lockdown. So don't get complacent. But keep studying all this, keep researching all this. These are very, very important points. I'll conclude today's cut the clutter on this, but with one more point: masks. Now you find that globally there is a lot more buzz on the masks. So Siddharth Mukherjee, who we quoted yesterday, the doctor, He's now saying everybody should wear a mask. Everybody who's outside on the street should wear a mask. Everybody who visits a hospital must wear a mask. Everybody in a high-risk area must wear a mask. Because he says, it's a tweet that you will see on our screen, he says, in fact, he appeals to Governor of New York that find everybody something to protect themselves. Give us time. In fact, his hashtag is buy us time. He says buy us time because medicines are coming. So he's an optimist. He thinks new medicines are coming. So you should delay the disease as much as possible. And the way to do that is by the greater use of the masks. And one reason that governments also in India are discouraging the use of the masks is because masks are in short supply. And everybody goes and buys an N95 mask. Now, everybody doesn't need an N95 mask. You can make a mask at home. In fact, we'll show you something from Czechoslovakia. There's also a hashtag. You make your own mask, or you make a mask for your neighbor, stitch a mask for your neighbor, put a mask on your face and get yourself photographed and share that photograph with a hashtag on this site. So you can make your own masks because you can prevent this from spreading. I'll give you two examples, one serious but helpful, one a little bit funny because we should also not lose our sense of humor. So one is the example of a little town called Vo. I don't know how you pronounce it, V-O with a thing on the top, in Italy, in Veneto province. Now this is a town of 3,400 people. That town had the first death from COVID in Italy. So they have gone and tested everybody in that town, that is all 3,400 people. They found half of them were infected, half of them were positive, but all of them were asymptomatic. So all they did was they quarantined the infected ones and uninfected ones, and they found the uninfected ones remained uninfected. So you can protect those who are uninfected by quarantining or social distancing. So that is a fact which is a positive fact, that this method works. And second, I told you, I'll tell you something to give you a little bit of a smile at the end of a grim discussion. This is Czech Republic. We had told you that Czech Republic had made masks mandatory. If you are found on the street anywhere outside without a mask, you are fined. But Czech Republic also has a large nudist community. So you will see this story. They've issued instructions even to nudists that you can walk around naked in your nudist areas, but you still have to wear a mask. So they found a couple, they caught a couple who decided to dip into a swimming pool naked. They caught them, they prosecuted them and fined them, not for swimming naked, but for not wearing masks. So when you do these things, do these really seriously, do it like the Czech.